Café Rollist is your caffeinated tabletop RPG break. It started as our exclusive Patreon show, but following a survey with our supporters, I am happy now to share its most recent episode here with you. If you enjoy this show, please consider checking out our archive of 100 or so additional episodes, which are still exclusive on Patreon. And here we are, streaming. Chris, can you tell me just one word so I'm double-checking that people can hear us?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Perfect, perfect. Did you grab yourself a cup of tea or maybe a coffee?
I've got my coffee with me, so I'm good.
Okay, great. Welcome for our fourth in a row in our streak for social distancing tabletop RPG fans of the Rollist Present. The Café Rollist. I'm mixing up my shows. I'm starting to get a few now. And we are joined today by Chris Henley from Darker Days Radio. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Considering the circumstances, I'm slowly starting to find a routine. I did manage to motivate myself to do some exercise today. So I did some baking yesterday. So all things considered, we are doing okay. What about you?
We're trying to get some stuff together so we can bake. That's sometimes, flour is now really hard to get hold of in some places. And I've basically been catching up on some, because I'm not commuting 2 hours each way to my job. I have gained hours to do hobby stuff like paintings and scenery and miniatures and so forth, and doing some freelance writing. So, there's some upsides to not commuting.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of jealous of some people I follow on TikTok and on Twitter. They're all playing Animal Crossing, sadly.
Right.
I'm very lucky to be the proud father of a 2-year-old, but 2-year-old while my wife is working from home, doesn't give you the leisure to practice your hobby that much more. So that's why I'm doing this show at 2 p.m., because that's my son's nap. So things are right. Easier. But I've been interviewing several people now from across Europe, and turns out that tabletop RPG fans are trying to do the best of the situation through having online convention. And I believe you are involved, or you launched one yourself. Tell us a bit more about that. Maybe introduce yourself a bit more before I forgot to ask you.
Okay. So I'm one of the main hosts for Darker Days Radio, which is a horror RPG podcast. We've been going for 10 plus years. We mainly focus on World of Darkness horror games, Chronicles of Darkness, and as of the last year, we're branching out into the worlds of Warhammer. So we have a spin-off show called Darkhammer, which is covering all three Warhammer settings, because there's Wrath and Glory for 40K, there's Warhammer Fantasy 4th Edition for Warhammer, and then there's coming up soon from Cubicle 7 is Soulbound, which is the Age of Sigmar roleplay game. And that's really natural because myself and many of the hosts are into wargaming and Warhammer and have a history of working for Games Workshop in some way. So I worked part-time during my undergrad for Games Workshop on their stores. But then otherwise, what else can I say about Darker Days Radio in general? We're a magazine format podcast, so we review books, we interview writers, interview the creators, we go to conventions, we take part in panels running organized games like with Gehenna Gaming, because they're based in Boston, where my co-host Mike is based. So that's how we're involved with Gehenna Gaming, who are running the Virtual HorrorCon. And what else do we do? And a whole lot of other things, like running panels at like UK Games Expo or at Dragon Meet. So a lot of things where we can share our love of horror games and provide original content, new ideas that you can add into your games.
Yourself, you're based in Manchester, am I right? Or North?
I'm based in Sheffield these days. So Darker Days Radio is actually based across three continents, because there's myself and some of our co-hosts are based in the UK. Mike, Chig, and Chris Mazer are based in the US, across the US, and Pete is based in Australia. So we're able to take part at multiple conventions across the world.
I assume that means that each of your cast member has experienced the situation with COVID-19 in a different fashion?
I think they've been experiencing it slightly differently due to their where they work, whether they work in healthcare as well. I personally work at the University of Nottingham, so obviously that isolating has rapidly occurred for the welfare of students and staff. And it's a new world. Everything they've talked about in education, about massively online education, has had to happen now. They've been developing tools for that for a long time, and now they've just had to just bite the bullet and really put all these ideas into action. So hopefully there'll be some good things that come out on the other side, which enables education across the world.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. Lately, I've been having fun going on TikTok, and I see so many teachers and students doing videos there. Not the courses themselves, but making jokes about the situation and the fact that they're now teaching, and everybody is all new, so everybody's learning what's appropriate, what is not appropriate in terms of attending a class or the way you dress. People are playing with backgrounds also. A lot of them put backgrounds from the office.
I've seen something where a teacher's been teaching a maths lesson through the Half-Life engine.
Wow.
So they're able to use it as a virtual environment, which is really, really clever. It's quite interesting, actually, the whole self-isolation and digital gaming as well, because one of the article we were Dubface Radio was written an article for the program for UK Games Expo about the interface between digital technologies and traditional tabletop games. And we've seen some examples of that over the last few years. Some are better than others. Some are very gimmicky. Some add some novelty. And again, we're seeing right now a rapid adaption of tabletop games to the online environment. So like the Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, all those resources to play that game are now online. So you can download the map and the newspaper. So if someone owns a copy of the game, you can play that online. Likewise, I think there's so many different examples. People are really trying to figure out quickly how they can keep the experience in the digital space. And that's really good.
Yeah, and I think it's great because I see a lot of people who had difficulties even considering trying it. And my personal view was that it's not second best to playing in person. It's a different experience. There's some things I find are better online. I find in terms of concentration, I'm more concentrated online than I am around the table, especially if we play in a pub or something like that, which can be very noisy. The fact that we're playing online, it's better. And in terms of handouts and things like that, there are definitely possibilities which are interesting. But then there are other dimensions, which of course you don't have online, which you would have around the table. But again, it's different.
Yeah.
It's not better or worse. It's different, in my view. And now a lot of people at their first go, and I think it's going to change the community for a long, long time. And it's making us tighter, I think. I think that there were a lot of people who were not interacting so much. Fans of streams, older role players, to take two large categories sort of to start with, who are playing together and finding them each other's on those tools, and it's quite impressive. But isn't that what isn't that what Virtual Oricon is all about then? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'm just going to read what one of the organizers in put as the press release. So Virtual Horrorcon is the world's first completely virtual tabletop RPG convention. hosted by Gehenna Gaming. So they're based in Boston, and they run a lot of Vampire, Call of Cthulhu, all those type of horror games there, and run events. So this is on April 4th, so this is next weekend, and April 5th, with a series of panels, workshops, interviews, and actual play one-shots, and more. So some of these will be streamed games. There will be guests for some of these games. So there'll be some showcase games.
Is it Easter that weekend? Because it's the third convention online I hear from, which is on the same weekend. I'm participating to a French one, CyberConf. I got an invitation for another one, which I forgot the name. It was not CouchCon. It was another one. And now I heard about this one. I didn't make research before interviewing you. I was like, oh, maybe I'll be able to join somehow. But it's on the same weekend.
It's same weekend, but I mean, because some of the stuff will be taking place on Eastern Standard Time, it means you can catch things late night that'll be happening. So, you know, there's an advantage to that. What else was I going to say? So, yes, there's a variety of partners that you can find online. There's a few raffles going on, and all of the money raised from the tickets to participate in the games will be going to the COVID-19 Solidarity Response Fund for the World Health Organization. This fund is managed by the United Nations Foundation in partnership with the Swiss Philanthropy Foundation. And yeah, you've got an array of horror games and one-shots and GMs from across the globe. Now, the other thing, there's a whole series of panels, but the thing I will note is that there is a showcase game of Vampire the Masquerade 5th Edition going on, with players including Alex Ward, Josephine McAdam, Jacob Burgess, Ife Nawadie, I mostly messed up that pronunciation anyway, Courtney Taylor and Dixie Cochran. So some of those names are recognizable for because they play the LA by Night streamed game. That's been going on. Dixie Cochran, of course, works for On Its Path Publishing. And then the list of partners is as follows. Charm Person Games, High Level Games, On Its Path Publishing, Jackalope LARP, LaCroix Grimoire, The Rusty Quill, Magpie Games, Erica Rose, Yusbrid, I messed that one up, Game Night, Dice Dungeons, MPD Designs, Amy Wilkins, Dark Days Radio, Games on Demand, Carrying Comfort Studios, Lovely Craftians, The Primogen, The Botch Pit, Simulcrum Studios, Werewolf the Podcast, and The Midnight World, which is a brand new RPG. There's more to that list. I've mostly messed up a few bits there. And then panels, if I look at panels, there's a whole list of stuff. I'm on some of them. I am hosting one or two, and then I'm guesting on some, and my co-host Mike's on some. So there's things like, how do you run episodic games? Tone and atmosphere in horror. Let's see, translating horror from film to the gaming tabletop. So, you know, what cues can you take from that media and bring it into your games? Art and designing horror games, voice acting in horror games, using tabletop RPGs in therapy, writing for community content. That's what I'll be talking on. Horrible and terrifying cosplay, mechanics to match the content of horror games. So do mechanics matter? Inclusivity and representation in horror games. And that's only like a thing I've mentioned, maybe a quarter of the panels going on. And that's on top of all the games you can take part in and watch online. So I'm running one streamed game, which will be a game of Wrath and Glory set in the Blackstone Fortress. That's the main setting of the Games Workshop Warhammer Quest Blackstone Fortress box game. And I think Mike's running a game of Shadowrun. That one won't be streamed. And then I've also got a game of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay that people can sign up for. And I'm biased on those two games because I write for them currently. So, you know, come take part.
So how did you get involved? Are you part of the organization, or they reached out to you?
So we've been working with Gehenna Gaming for a while now. Because Mike is based in Boston, and so are Gehenna Gaming. So they meet up for events. Like PAX East happened just recently. So Mike was on a panel with Gehenna Gaming about tone and horror in gaming media. So we have a close relationship with them because they kind of, Mike can work with them in events in the US. They can you know, get in contact with us, and it makes it easier for when we run events then hopefully in future in the UK and Europe, where they might come over to something like UK Games Expo to run to do stuff, and you know, we're there on hand as well. So we're kind of just cousins across the pond, as it were. They run more events. Dark Days Radio is more of a writers collective as well, because we've got people like we've written stuff for the Storytellers Vault, writing for a number of games, and one of our other hosts, Crystal Mazer, has worked on, you know, Vampire 5th Edition. She also writes for the Pip roleplay system and a few other games as well. So yeah, that's how it's all happened.
Amazing. It's great if they can show up to conventions over here. I know that Mira from the Podcast Zone is hopeful to have some more live stuff in front of audience at Dragon Meet, so that would be definitely great to have them there.
Yeah, exactly. Dragon Meet's been great for Dark Days Radio, because we've run a few things there, and you know, likewise, UK Games Expo keeps being more and more interesting for us. So, and it's good that we've got people we can work with, like Modiphius, like Onyx Path, like Cubicle 7, who we have close ties to. So. And it's good we can run this convention, because I was meant to be at a convention that weekend down in Swansea. I was meant to be a guest speaker with Howard Ingham Wood and Matthew Dawkins talking about horror games and so forth. So that's like, you know, that's not happening. I'd even painted some toy soldiers to give away in a raffle. So that's not happening. So, for now we're doing this, and we'll see what happens when things have been moved to a later date and we're allowed outside.
Yeah, hopefully Expo will take place at the new date. I believe you had you mentioned you had a panel there. I'm supposed to have a panel there as well. So,
we had a panel last year. I'm not doing a panel this year because meant to hopefully doing some other things, but we'll see what happens anyway. I'm sure there might be some slots, but it'll be good. Hopefully that one will take place, because UK Games Expo is a great event. And I think quite different to some of the ones that takes place in the US, because it's pretty much all under one roof.
Well, it's nice you got the best of both worlds at Darker Days Radio, because you got people even in Australia. So you can have PAX South, PAX East, and have people here with Modiphius and Expo and Dragon Meet. So it's great. You're well set for networking with everybody.
Yeah. It's like Pete was down in at Australia. He was running games of Vampire there on behalf of Modiphius and other games. It's really good, because the other thing is that because we're across multiple continents, and you know, I lived at one point in Germany, went to things like Essen Spiel because it was pretty much on my doorstep. I think we get a good overview of especially for horror games. I think we get a good view of what we and opinions on what we think is good game content, because tastes can vary even amongst native English speaking countries. So just because, you know, a US audience kind of likes that type of game style, it may not be the same opinion across the board in Australia or in the UK. I mean, and the UK is a diverse place as well anyway. So, you know, it's really good that way. I think this Virtual Horror Con is going to be, hopefully it's not going to be the only one. I think if it goes well enough, it'd be nice to see it happen in the future on a regular basis. It's just good as a rapid response to the change of our gaming environment, to still be able to do something fun when we are stuck indoors.
Yeah, and I mean, last week we had CyberConf, the French side of things, and it was interesting to see how people were first enthusiastic about organizing this first one, and a lot of people, a lot of streamers, game designers, podcasters, publishers were working together on something while they had never worked together on something before for time availability, geographical reason. And so it was really binding together the community in a new way. And they also had this enthusiasm about, let's not make this a one-off. Let's do it again and again. And regardless, well, hopefully the situation will improve and we will be able to enjoy the fresh air and some warm hugs with one another, better soon than later. But even, again, this might change the community in a somewhat permanent way if on top of Eschen Spiel, the PAX East, and so on, we end up with a handful of online convention which anyone across the world can contribute to and participate. I think it's amazing. And again, it's slightly frustrating that those first, this first round is all happening on the same weekend, but, I really look forward to, because the truth is, at the RPG Academy, of which I'm part of the faculty, we do have Acadec Online as an event for people who could not attend Acadecon, which is in Ohio. And it was actually difficult to have people to join. We had a lot of game master motivated to join, but, a lot of tables, the 2 years we tried to run it, were cancelled because we didn't have enough players. And then we had some stream panels and so on, and they had a little success, but it was not really on the radar of most of the people in the community. So now it might become a thing for everyone.
I think it's a good game changer in the sense that it means there's less of that fear of missing out also, because, you know, let's be honest, like, getting down to Dragon Meet, for example, is great, but it's not always possible for everyone because it is quite a long journey, even within the UK. And let's just be honest, UK trains are not great.
So expensive. So, I mean, there's so many conventions. People tell me I should go to Contingency. I would like to go to Grog Meet. Yeah. I would like to go to this and there. And with a child and so on, and the price of trains is just unaffordable, sadly.
And that's the first cost before you get to, you know, thinking about accommodation and, you know, London. I'm kind of, you know, when you hear like so many conventions or events take place in London, you're just like, oh, does it have to be London? I kind of like the north. You know, I used to live in Manchester as well, and Manchester's really just a fun place. It's easier to get around in, sort of, because everything's so centralized, unlike London. But I think it's interesting to see how things are adapting, and even large companies are adapting to this. So, for example, like Games Workshop, they were meant to be at Adepticon in the US, and that's obviously didn't happen this weekend. So they changed their entire preview to be online. And I think while I was watching it, they were saying they had like over, and it's kind of funny the number, but they had over 40,000 people watching the live stream to see what the new releases were coming up when they can get back in the factory to do mass production and get stuff out. But that just shows how good, if everyone is aware of these things, the impact and outreach you can have with online streaming. I think the thing is, obviously, with everyone online streaming, we're really stress testing the infrastructure. So, for example, I mean, this will just be for my university, but other universities surely have all gone through the same growing pains this last week before. They had to bump up their VPN licenses. They had to expand bandwidth. Like, I couldn't get onto the supercomputer to do my work. So, you know, we've had Netflix, like, you know, having to drop its bitrate. So we're going to see, hopefully, if more people are working from home, we'll see more effort into bolstering the internet infrastructure, which will make these online conventions hopefully more and more easy to run, so that more and more people can watch them. It'll be easier to stream because, you know, you have to deal with your own bandwidth where you're, especially when you're doing a call like this, or you're doing for Twitch, you know, doing for Twitch or whatever, you're taking one stream from one video conferencing thing, and then having to shunt it back out onto your streaming network. So that may all begin to evolve much more to better accommodate that as well. So it's interesting times as always.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see. I mean, we got much needed investment in the communication infrastructure, but it also, obviously, I've been among the people well, I mean, there's so many people, you know, campaigning, being a bit militant about investment in the healthcare infrastructure as well. And now we, I think we're going to see this investment happening too late for many of us, sadly. But hopefully now it's going to happen. We're going to go back at reinvesting massively in that. You were mentioning Warhammer 40K and Wargaming, which is really not a world I'm aware of. Somewhat obviously, it's a very material, you know, the miniatures and so on. Are there tools for people to play Warhammer 40K and other war games online with one another as opposed
there to... There are some unofficial things. I think it's something called Vassal, which has a way of like basically moving things on screen. It's very much top-down 2D. It's not anything really to look at, but it still allows you to kind of do some gaming. Obviously, right now, I guess every single wargaming company is basically saying, work through your backlog of plastic that you've got lurking around, because the people always have more stuff that they bought than they've ever had time to paint, and now is the time. But then also, I mean, there are certain online versions of certain games. So, for example, if you, say, wanted to play Mordheim or get some of the experience, Mordheim was a classic Warhammer fantasy skirmish game. There is a computer game version of that. It's not a direct translation, but it is the world, it is the setting. But conversely, there is a game called Warhammer Underworlds, which is a hexagon-based, miniatures-based war game that GW makes, which does have a direct computer game translation that you can get. So there are some ways around it, but like, you know, for your traditional kind of skirmish games like and war games like 40K and like Age of Sigmar, there isn't really an ideal way of doing it. I think that's just the price you pay for wanting to play games that involve nicely sculpted miniatures on 3D terrain. That's part of the immersive joy of playing those games. So I don't think there's an easy answer for it, but there are some alternatives.
Do you think we could reach a point when I can imagine how mind-bending it could be for such a company, but seeing someone, because I played poker for a while also, it was interesting to see how, of course, people play around the table, and that's an experience, but there's also a vast online poker playing community. Do you think there could be a point when Games Workshop would consider having their own official version of Warhammer 40K? I mean, there are several real-time strategy games, but these are not, as far as I know, translation of the actual game. It's not like playing Dungeons and Dragons on Roll 20 using D&D Beyond as your platform, and D&D Beyond itself is I think it's quite an interesting service and product in terms of mean of income for Wizards of the Coast. Do you think Games Workshop... Have you ever heard or seen anything about Games Workshop saying, well, maybe we need to move into the virtual environment?
I've not seen or heard anything like that. I mean, I think the closest thing, because of course part of the experience is measuring the distances, placing the models and so forth. So I think the only way to potentially replicate that within a digital space where you still have your miniatures and your opponent still has theirs will be a very fancy, when it's obviously cost effective and available, is things like HoloLens and these mixed reality headsets. Because if you've got cameras set up around the board to take pictures of your board setup, and your opponent has the same, then what you can see on the HoloLens, you could see a viewpoint of their board and where their miniatures are in relation to yours, which are physically in your space. But that's something which that has to require a lot of different things. You'll have to standardize things like terrain will have to be standardized for the boards. But that might be quite possible with things like, for example, Warcry. When you buy that war game that Games Workshop makes, they have not only do you get the terrain in the boxes, but you get a series of cards that tell you where to place the terrain. So to make it kind of like, so you've got standardized maps to fight across. So that might be a way of doing it, is where you buy a standardized pack of scenery, you've got your standardized maps that show you how it's placed. And then between you and your opponent, you've both got physical copies of your terrain and your own miniatures. Or what you don't have is your opponent's miniatures. And that's the thing captured by cameras and projected into your opponent's space through their HoloLens or whatever mixed reality technology. I mean, we've seen some of this kind of ideas with Tilt 5, which is a mixed reality board game environment that's in development. And we've seen similar things with war games in the past, trying to use computers like Exilis and Golem Arcana, but those didn't really take off. So there's a lot of work still to be done to retain what we love about war games, but take advantage of digital technology so that it's not just running the game for us or being a gimmick. It has to have some added value.
So if I understand correctly, because again, my familiarity with wargaming is extremely limited, it's part of the game to measure yourself with a ruler of some kind, the distance between the miniatures. So it wouldn't be... it would be a loss of experience to actually have something which tells you, you click on 2 points on between two miniatures and it tells you, okay, that's the distance and that's it. And that you would
Well, some war game, there are other war games out on the market. There are things like Guild Ball. There are things like War Machine and Hordes by Privateer Press. Some of these games allow pre-measuring, so that could work. Some games rely on you not pre-measuring. Some games that Games Workshop makes, like also like Aeronautica Imperialis, which is about aircraft combat, uses hex grids. So that's perfect for an online format. So it really depends upon how the war game has been designed. But I mean, still, There's something about getting down to the miniatures eye level and seeing the terrain that you've put together, that you may have scratch built, the customization of the miniatures you've done for yourself, the painting that you've done, and being able to see that and see your opponents, which is why I think possibly, you know, a mixed reality kind of hardware is perhaps the future of that to enable that. But I'm sure Games Workshop is thinking, and other companies are thinking loads about this, because, I mean, at one point we were talking about, oh, what does digital sculpting mean and 3D printing mean for war games? And the fact is, 3D printing means people can print stuff at home, but it's still not to the quality that you can buy from a company, because the resolution of printers are still not as good and the material is not as forgiving. So some of these printed miniatures are a bit brittle,
especially if you print them yourself, because you what I found also is people now I'm applying for jobs at the moment and I need to print paper reports, and I don't have a printer and I wouldn't have a use for it because I don't print often enough and the quality would not be enough to show up at a job interview. But I did have something 3D printed for a game of Star Wars D6. And I realized that actually you got businesses just like paper printers, you got 3D printers. So you don't have your printer. You show up on the high street or you get it delivered, but you got it printed by a professional printer. Then you got a better quality, but it's still expensive though.
It is expensive, and I think there's a lot with these. There's a lot of maintenance to do on these. So even though you think, oh, I can print a vast army of, I don't know, 100 miniatures, that's a lot. There's a lot of upfront investment, and there's a quality cost involved in that, and there's a resolution. I mean, I've been at conferences for material science, and I've seen some of the upcoming kind of technologies before there, and they're very good for doing rapid prototyping. And from a point where you can also make a cast, especially if you're doing resin miniatures, where you can make a cast of the printed model, but you do some cleanup on the printed model first before it goes into making the resin mold. So you remove all those graduations that you get from the printing process. So there's things you can do for that. But again, we've still not seen 3D printing mean that, you know, traditional buying miniatures from a company is dead.
Yeah, you would show up, a Games Workshop would be a printer themselves, and they don't have any stock. You just show up and
potentially
push a button, I think, and you got your collection.
I think that's more likely, is that a shop like a Games Workshop store or something like that would have a 3D printer, and the whole point of it is not to produce your entire army, but to produce the few miniatures which they can't, that any shop has difficulty keeping shelf space for, because it doesn't sell frequently enough, or it's a very old model and it doesn't sell frequently in large enough quantities to mean it has a SKU on the shelf space or whatever. But to be able to go, I want that classic model, can you print it? And for them to go, yeah, we can, that would be really cool.
That would be nice. Or missing, if you break a piece or something like that.
Exactly. Or even just parts so people can do customization. I think that would be more groundbreaking for miniature wargaming rather than printing entire armies, because, as I say, I'd rather have some dedicated staff looking after the machine than me having to spend an hour messing, cleaning it up just to print something that likely could go wrong because the file is in the wrong format or something like that.
It's funny how each time there's a new technology, people picture that like the new technology is going to replace the old one. And it's never like that.
Yeah.
It's always the new one find a way to integrate itself with the old one, and the benefits of the two enhance one another, and they're more than the sum of their parts. You are a specialist of the Law of White Wolf and Chronicles of Darkness, am I right? I was wondering...
Somewhat, yes.
I was wondering, because we, before the situation happened, we were about to start a campaign of set in London, using Fall of London at London RPG Community.
Oh, great, yeah.
But I was wondering, trying a curveball question. So we're going through a situation which is historic, really.
Yes.
I think we ever faced something similar, and the consequences are going to be difficult to fathom at this point. Do you think, I assume that it will, but do you think this should be integrated, and would you have just like that ideas how it could be integrated or should not be integrated to the Law of Worlds of Darkness?
There's a really simple answer to this. And this goes back to an article I wrote for Beast of War about the history of White Wolf and dealing with tricky topics. You know, original White Wolf produced for Wraith the Oblivion, which was a game about playing ghosts and wraiths. They produced a book called Charnel Houses of Europe, which dealt with the Shoah. It dealt with the Holocaust. And it's a very good book, both from a historical way and how to deal. And it's not about why it took place, because the whole point is we're not trying to portray Nazis or Hitler as a monster. Humans are the monsters that committed that horrible atrocity. The point of that book was about how do you deal with the repercussions of it in society, and about how do ghosts deal with that. And when the event of 9/11 took place, the fall of the two towers, there was a book coming out at the time, which I can't remember which book it was. I actually do think it was the book which was New York by Night that was being published just at that time. And they put a foreword in it where they acknowledged it was, and Justin Achilles written a lot on Twitter about this, because I think he was developer at the time for Vampire the Masquerade. And he said, we acknowledge this event happened, but we're not writing about it in this book. It's too soon. There's too much to write about, too much to cover. And since then, no White Wolf book has addressed the World Trade, the whole event of 9/11 as an action that was initiated, perpetrated, or some way influenced by supernatural entities, because that is just trivializing the true importance and true horror of what happened. The true horror is humans did it. Okay, we're the worst. If there's any lesson to take from World of Darkness or Chronicles of Darkness games, is, well, you're playing monsters, you're playing vampires, you're playing werewolves, whatever. Ultimately, the worst monsters in the world are humans, because they have no reason for the horrible acts that they do. Like, a vampire is driven to feed on blood because of an innate curse. But they still, that's something built into them. It does, it, whereas a human has a choice for all these other actions. And it's ultimately that which kind of, you could say, you know, has an impact on their soul, on the world. So I would say that likely we're not going to see any of this current events being written into a White Wolf book anytime soon. I think Modiphius, who are leading the development of Vampire 5th Edition, have done well so far, and they are responding to all the concerns and things that had to be done in response to when the Vampire 5th Edition book came out and everything that was said about Chechnya and the genocide occurring there. So, yeah, we're not going to see anything of this written about anytime soon, and if it is, it will be seen as an event which occurred, which vampires or any other supernatural creature will be witness to, will be involved in, but it is not the work of anything supernatural. I mean, that if someone wants to do that in their own home game, by all means, go for it. You know, that's up to you. More power to you. But I think in printed material, because you have to be careful, because then you're trivializing the tragedy of other people. And sure, you know, if you really want to do that in your own games, go, oh, actually, this virus outbreak is due to the actions of Black Spiral Dancers, who are these werewolves in, who are very evil and wealthy apocalypse. You know, knock your socks off, go for it. I mean, I'm not going to stop you. I may think that's a valid way of possibly playing. I may think it's particularly crass, but I would definitely think it's particularly crass if it was in printed material.
Yeah, and I guess also it depends of your table. What's important is to agree these sort of things at session zero.
Yeah,
and even maybe can be a way to process the events for some people, engage with them in a way which is, I don't have the quiet word, not entertaining, but, in a way which, well, yeah,
catharsis,
yeah, exactly. So if this sort of things is agreed between the game master, the storyteller, and the players, as you say, by all means. Anyway, if whatever you do, or no matter how crass it's, you're doing it, if you're doing it at home with the consent of your players, it's your business to some extent. We don't have to even be cool with it. But I like the idea of being witness of things. So I don't know. I'm pushing this a bit. If you have issues with it, but let me know. But yeah, if I don't know if you had to run a game of Vampire the Masquerade, when or do you think the world of Vampire would be witness to that and react to that? Do you think you would have an interesting story to tell, which would not be about the reason it's happening is supernatural,
but yeah,
it's happening and we're dealing with the consequences of that?
Yeah, I think, again, this is something that I think Justin Achilles written a lot about, is that at least we're definitely with vampire, because you're playing characters that are immortal. They are parasites on society. They don't cause great upheaval, they just take advantage of great upheaval. So I think an event like this for vampires is interesting to play through as witnesses to it, because it has an impact on freedom of movement. It has an impact on feeding. It has an impact on, like, one of the main features of Vampire the Masquerade 5th Edition is the idea that humans' blood comes in different humours, and you can gain certain abilities or enhancements if you feed on a person that has a particular humor within their blood. So there could be a worry about cleanliness of blood, and that's something that's been explored in by a particular bloodline in Vampire the Requiem, the cousin to Vampire the Masquerade. It's not a continuation, it's a cousin, it's a remix, it's a reimagining. So there's a bloodline there called the Morbus bloodline, who basically feed on infected people and they cause infection. So it has implications in that sense that you can explore, and I think that is interesting for a game where the rules of society have been upended and what you used to be able to do is no longer valid. So, you know, in this time, you might actually have vampires fall, many of them, because they have such limited ability to go out and feed, and what with the keeping the masquerade and so forth, going into torpor and sleeping it off and waking up at a later date. So it's interesting from that point. I think it's interesting as vampires to be witnesses and how they deal with it, as they deal with how the world has changed.
Yeah, because we were creating characters and I created a cleaver character. So for people who are not aware, it's a vampire who's got a sort of an entourage of people who he feeds upon regularly. And I was seeing the other type of predators, it's called, if I remember correctly. And you had Scene Queen, who goes to club and is popular and feed on people attending parties in the club. If you are a Scene Queen and you are in a World of Darkness universe and this kind of situation we are seeing right now, how do you do things as there are no parties anymore? Do you still try to run a party? I mean, it's interesting to engage with things and think of the consequences and put you, because what I love with tabletop role playing games is that, of course, I'm playing a vampire. It's the fantastical, monstrous being, but it's mainly also putting yourself in the situation of somebody else. So when you play a vampire scene queen, so maybe it's about feeding on vampires, but to some extent, it's also putting yourself in the situation of being someone who owns a club and is running it. And or do you deal with this situation of being closed for several months and so on? And it might be in sort of the background of your fantastical, epic horror story. But I think it's still a way to engage with those kind of realities which are different from our own, as office workers or whatever job we do, which is quite unique and different from any other than watching a movie telling you the story of a club owner somewhere.
Yeah, it's interesting times definitely for that game, to play as those type of characters. And I mean, that's the fun thing with Vampire, especially, I think, and most, World of Darkness and Chronicles of Darkness games. Cause I mean, again, you could go through the same motions with Vampire the Requiem quite happily. Even more so because you've got so many more resources because the setting is so free to design how you want. There is no meta plot. You build the city setting that you want. You can do the remixes you want and use whichever bloodlines and clans and so forth. And I think the great thing is always using the vampire is always best played where it has been a metaphor for something within society. Where it's an allegory. And I mean, also, you could do the same thing. I mean, we talked about Warhammer 40K. You can look at the hardship people are going through right now and view that through the lens of the Warhammer 40,000 universe. And you think, wow, how could you do that? Well, it's like, well, what happens to a world where a lockdown occurs because there is some horrific plague brought about by the servants of Nurgle? I mean, there we're going to go with that because, you know, we're setting it in a different place, a different time. But again, the same things will happen, a lockdown, a restriction of movement. And that's also quite horrific in the Warhammer 40,000 universe because the Imperium is this kind of pseudo-fascist dictatorship. So again, you can explore some of the fears and what is going on in our world right now through that lens. So just because 40K is about bolt guns and gene sealers and space marines doesn't mean you can't tell a interesting kind of passion play.
It's actually the last game I played, the last convention I attended, well, it was more of a meetup, was the Chaosium UK meetup here in London. And a lot of people didn't show up because it was just before it started here in the UK. But the game which Jan Cooper ran for us in RuneQuest was in a somewhat West African inspired antiquity country. I'm not super aware of Glorantha and RuneQuest, so I cannot tell the detail, but we were very wealthy nobles with loads in a slave oriented society, and the story was revolving around a pandemic of some kind of plague, because it was no pun intended, in the air when we played that game. And it was interesting because we played it, in a very detached way, like would be like role playing what it's like to be a celebrity right now. You know, the this week someone tweeted a picture of, I'm self social distancing on my yacht in the middle of the Caribbean, and people reacted rightfully, like, thank you so much for being so wealthy and sensitive to share that. But we played insensitive to the point of parody individuals. Where was I going with that? But I mean, there's tabletop role playing game is a good way to deal with trauma, to use an important word, I think, as long as, again, you use the proper safety tool and everybody around the table has agreed to what's happening and is ready to raise their hand or touch the X card if things are not going for some reason appropriately. Anything else to plug in?
I'm going to plug my other writing. So the next issue of Cyber Magazine, which is a pop science futurism magazine I write for, we changed the theme to be about, so it's called Viral, the next issue, to look at the science behind viruses, both you know, how we fight them, but also how we deal with them with technology. So, you know, device tracking and those type of things that we're seeing in China and Israel. And there's negative consequences of that. So I've written an article about that. And another article I've written is about how we can genetically modify viruses to make materials that are in a particular structure, which are relevant for the next generation of rechargeable batteries. So we're trying to look at positive aspects of what viruses are and negative aspects, and be informative while also having some very cool technology on display. So there's Cyber's been going for about a year or so now. There's 4 issues out already. I've written in 3 of those. The last issue has my article about nuclear fusion and the type of technologies being developed to bring us a step closer to that dream of clean, renewable fuel, which is, you know, again, it's one of these things, it's going to change the world. And it was like, that was said like 50 years ago. But I mean, things are never that simple. There's always a challenge to be dealt with in it. But I mean, that basically it encompasses all my interests, because I'm a computational scientist. I'm a chemist by training. I work in research software engineering now. So I work on many different projects that cover things like enzyme design and disease screening and so forth, and battery technology. So, it's a very cool magazine. People should check out.
Sounds awesome. Well, everything you named, or as many things you want to, just send me an email or a private tweet with the links, and I put everything in the description of this episode for people to find.
Oh, yeah, everything. Yeah, basically, best way to find everything is either at Gehenna Gaming for everything, tweet on Twitter right now for everything to do with the virtual con, at Darker Days Radio is our Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We've got a website with 200 episodes that people can listen through. So if you only just found the podcast and you're stuck inside and need something to listen to, there is, well, old episodes are about 2 hours long. Our newer ones are about an hour long because we split things up over weeks now. So there's a lot of content there. There's hundreds and hundreds of hours of content there. So, yeah, that's the easiest way to find us.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris. Yeah, there's so much content.
It's been great. Thank you.
And, yeah, we've got new subscribers on YouTube thanks to this. Thank you so much. I'm glad. First of all, it's really good for my own mental health to have this conversation with awesome people like Chris and the other guests before. I will try to continue to have them every 2 days or so, at least twice a week. If you haven't yet, please do check the main show, The Release Podcast, which is available on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, any podcast catcher you can catch, you will find them. There's more Café Release you can find in audio format on our Patreon, and the audio format of this one will also be available on the Patreon for people supporting the show there. Otherwise, it's all available for free on YouTube. Leave comments in the section. I will share them with Chris and my other guest. And yeah, stay home, stay safe, clean your hand, do everything you can, and we'll go through this together. And yeah, love you all.
See ya.
Our logo is designed by Roland Kunz. Our theme song is Playtime by Jazar, which you can download on the Free Music Archive. A video version of this episode is available on YouTube. Please consider subscribing to our channel there. Leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. If you would like more Café Rollist, you can also get access to our archive of 100 or so additional episodes via Patreon. If you want to be informed of everything released by The Rollist, we have a monthly newsletter for you to join. And if you want to contribute via the chat room to one of our recordings, subscribe to our Twitch channel and social media accounts to be informed of when streams are happening. Finally, links to everything I just mentioned can be found in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening to us, and remember, you are The Rollist.